Hi guys, just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward, all about the world's worst prison, with Australian comedian Dan Muggleton, just a bit of the usual admin. If you enjoy the show already, or you're a new listener and you have listened to this episode and you think, oh that's cool, I want to support them, well there's lots of ways you can support both myself and Ben as we continue making this show. We're nearly 140 episodes in, coming up on the 150, that's a lifetime of episodes. Hours of our lives. So yes, if you want to just follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter. We're on at Worst Foot. I'm on at BazMaxDay and Ben is on at Ben Vandeveld. You can also find us on Facebook. We're on Worst Foot Forward on there. And you can find our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, with all of our previous episodes. And you can also send an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us about anything that comes up in the show or any ideas you have about the show going forward. If you want to help support us a little bit more than that, you could go on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, click the little 5 stars below us, and maybe even write a sentence or two telling people how much you enjoy the show. It really seems like such a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in terms of popping us up in different charts around the world and bringing us to more people's attention. If you like us enough to slip us a few quid, well, you can go to patreon.com/worstfootforward. You can give us as little as $2 a month. That goes a long, long way to helping us keep the podcast afloat. And there are various different rewards and tier levels depending on how much you support us. If you give us $3 a month, you're entitled to some extra secret bonus content every month. In a couple of days, our $3 and above Patreon supporters will be getting a little bit of extra bonus content all about the history of Halloween. So if you want a little bit of that, hop on board right now and you might be able to get in at the early end of that. And there are also other rewards, such as being able to suggest a topic, come on board as a guest judge, or even host us in your own home. We haven't had anyone do that yet, though maybe you, listening to us right now, will be that person. So yes, go on patreon.com, see all the different things that we intend to do with the podcast if we get to certain levels of support as well, like live shows, writing our book, doing a tour, hosting a futurist's dinner party, all sorts of weird and wonderful things we want to do. And to those people who already support us on there, thank you. And if you're about to be one of those new people, thank you as well. Let us know if you come across any particularly awful Halloween costumes. And here's your little trick and treat for the Halloween season. It's our new episode about the world's worst prisons.
Let's get behind bars.
Yeah.
They're talking about the world.
Let's get behind bars.
Yeah. How does the podcast
We're an Irishman in Australia, in London, of course we'll be behind bars.
Hey, there we go. That was huge. Thanks. That was is that pre-written?
Oh my god.
I went to look at his notes there. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You guys are that quick?
Yeah, thank you.
I'm gonna die here.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Alright.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxday, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. In the words of Red from The Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne was the man who crawled through 500 yards of shit and came out clean the other end. You, dear listeners, are 139 episodes deep into Worst Foot Forward, and I doubt any of you will ever be clean again. And beside me is my cellmate in this prison of our own creation, Ben Vandeveld.
Hello, fellow prisoner.
You're right.
Yeah.
If you were in prison.
Yeah.
I imagine it would be for a white collar crime, first of all.
Mate, I am a coiled spring of testosterone fury. Day one in the yard, I would go out there, I'd find the biggest guy out there.
You're going to take that?
I would just gently cup his balls.
Oh, okay. I definitely am one of those guys who, if he was in prison, would be called the professor.
Yeah.
Immediately start running a lending library out of myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to ask, how would you try and escape from prison?
I mean, it would probably be burrowing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You're a naturally burrowing creature.
Yes, I am. I don't think it'd be ladders or anything like that.
Yeah.
The only book I've ever read with a prison escape, I think, is an amazing book called Shantaram, about it was a guy who was Australia's most wanted man who managed to escape from And it's basically the prelude to the whole story. He escapes from Australia's highest security prison. He was banged up there for being a bank robber, and then goes into the Mumbai underworld.
Oh, cool.
And he did it mostly by positioning ladders that he could climb up in places that were in the blind spot of the Panopticon.
Right, and were there like several snakes also interspersed between them?
Absolutely.
Yeah. By the guards.
Yeah, and there was an enormous gorilla who was throwing barrels down in his way. I think it would be a burrow. What about you? How do you escape?
I think I would go for either classic dressed as a washerwoman, but I think, again, this would have to be specifically a Victorian prison.
Yeah.
Or I'd spend several years watching Derren Brown videos and stuff like that on YouTube and just confidently walk out of prison one day and, like, body language the guards into thinking, oh, he must be allowed out. There's an open door, just walking towards it. I look like I belong on the outside.
What's brilliant, I don't know if you can hear this, listeners, but outside of my street, someone is doing some drilling in the street outside where we're recording to really give this podcast the feel of a prison break.
Yeah. That's our escape route, our guest's escape route if things go south.
Yes, it is. So our guest this week is an Australian stand-up comedian from Sydney, which, according to his bio here, is objectively a better city than Melbourne, and I am not going to argue with that. He has sold out shows at festivals all around Australia, including the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Adelaide Fringe, Canberra Comedy Festival, Darwin Fringe, and the Sydney Fringe, where he was twice elected as the artist to watch. He has performed all over the world at a variety of different comedy venues and has moved over here to the United Kingdom in a classic reverse Commonwealth travel decision. He is now the host of the Union Jack-Off podcast, where he talks to members of former Commonwealth countries about how it is both weird and incredibly normal all at once to be a former Commonwealth member living in the United Kingdom. He is the always erudite, always funny, and very understated Daniel Muggleton.
Hey.
Hey. Ireland's former Commonwealth, but we were so petty that when we declared a republic, we said we're leaving the Commonwealth as well.
Oh, so you could...
Because obviously we were a colony, so we could be in the Commonwealth if we want. And indeed, I think the Commonwealth now has countries in it that weren't
British colonies. Yeah, so you don't take part in the Commonwealth Games?
No. Is there any point, like, you guys, because us taking part in the Commonwealth Games means we get to win some running.
That is maybe an argument for Ireland to do it, because we don't win that many Olympic medals.
Exactly, it's a good little limp in.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be fair, I sort of, the Commonwealth is Britain internationally talking to the African and Asian nations going, we cool? We okay? We cool? We're friends now? Whereas Australia is just like tacking along going, yeah, we're just going to bask in the reflected guilt of Britain that hides all of our crimes.
No. We get it. It gets brought up.
Yeah?
We somehow get the blame for what you did before Australia was like federated.
Yeah, well, you're all the bad eggs.
Yeah,
from over here.
I mean, that is why I chose prison.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was like, as a former penal colony, I think I've got some authority.
Does that make Australia the best prison? Because I lived in Australia for a year, and indeed in Sydney, and I agree it is objectively much better than Melbourne.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely nicer. Well, that was one of I've got a couple of candidates for the best prison, yeah. But like if you got like worst prisons and worst at being a prison,
yeah,
then I think Australia was definitely the one.
Well, it's weird. The thing is, Australia as a prison mixed sort of like the best and worst worlds of being a prison, because it was very difficult to live in. You were surrounded by lots of vicious animals that tried to kill you, and there was a lot of hard labour, but
yeah.
World's biggest open prison.
Exactly. But I mean, also very difficult to escape.
Yes.
Like, if you were a convict in Australia, to like escape, you'd have to go into the bush,
yeah.
Which wouldn't go well because you're British. Like your British skin would not really withstand the Australian sun.
Yeah,
and if you went
yeah.
the other way, there's just water, like heaps of it. There's heaps of water.
Or, you know, you get to Indonesia, who I hear have got a famously liberal penal system.
Very chill.
Yeah.
That's what I think. The official position.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to prison as an Australian, you want to go to Indonesia. There's actually been a few of those. I don't know if you guys get that news out here. Drug smuggling.
Yeah. I think there was quite a famous one when I was in Australia.
Chappelle Corby.
I think it was her, yeah.
The weed in the bodyboard bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I didn't realize it was there. And it's like, it's 4 kilos of weed in a bodyboard bag.
Yeah.
A bodyboard weighs like 250 grams. I think you'd know, mate.
also, that's not like a
Like, you're emptying out a handbag, go, how did that random thing get in there? It's a bodyboard bag, there's literally one item in this
thing. Yeah, if you are smuggling so much drugs that it makes your sporting equipment un-aerodynamic, then you know that it's there. Yeah. Also, if you're Australian and you have, you know, two options of your two nearest countries to smuggle drugs to, you've either got Indonesia or New Zealand, go to the fucking liberal hobbit paradise.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've heard about Australia and New Zealand, they're not that liberal about bringing, like, like vegetation or like any kind of plant life.
I got my golf clubs. I got my golf clubs cleaned for free by the Australian customs service.
Yeah, you got it.
Because you arrive in them, they're like, they're looking under microscope at your golf clubs and going, oh, there's little bits of clay in the cleats of your golf clubs. Exactly. We're going to power hose these for you.
That's incredible. At the end, did you go, thanks, Caddy. Any advice on the tricky par five? Because essentially, that's what New Zealand is. It's just a very long dog leg.
It's very true.
It is, but there's a water gap in the middle. Yeah.
We always ask you to guess what they're worst at, Dan. What would you say you're worst at?
This is so easy. Getting complimented. So bad.
Oh, wow.
So bad at it. Man, freaks me out.
Can I say how nice your beard is looking?
Don't.
Please. I really like that buffed red hat.
Thank you. I can't. I'm trying to learn, because, like, it's clearly just some kind of, like, crippling, like, hangover from my childhood. But, like, I just can't. I keep, like, after shows, like, you know, because you do comedy, people come up to me, like, hey, man, great job. And I'm like, I mean, it was, you know, I do that, I deflect immediately.
It
depends. If it's before a show, or if anyone asks me, like, are you the comedian? I'll be like, yeah, I'm really funny. And I'll be really bullish before it. But after it, I do know what you mean. I like the compliment is the laughter that came out of their mouths. I don't need.
How do you deal with the, like, when does this anxiety set in? Like, just before the applause at the end, you have to tell them to not clap.
No. On stage, it's safe. They're at a safe distance. They're the Tasmanians, my new South. I feel very, very safe. But no, it's like after. I mean, it's not that, like, I get weird. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, a script.
Yes,
that I can use. When people are like, hey, I thought you were really funny. Just to be like, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I've got a special on Amazon Prime. Please follow me on Twitter. Thank you. I just walk away. But at the moment, I'm like, I fucked that joke up. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, that was all right. Thanks. Oh, by the way. Oh, sorry. And then I just walk away.
Yeah. You're suddenly going to go, oh, you're going to find what a broken human being I am when I don't have a microphone and lights.
Yeah.
Because I do so much comparing, if I get approached by a group of people, I will just start comparing the group, which is horrible, filthy, dirty social interaction.
Sunday lunch with you is a nightmare.
It really is. I'm an absolute disgrace around waiting staff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My fiance gets so pissed. She's like, stop befriending them. It's normal, isn't it? Like, dude, they don't want a line of inquiry. They just want to know where you're eating and they want to bring it.
They're just trying to get a tip. They're not your real friends.
Oh, not even a tip. In this country, you guys do not give a fuck about a tip, which is embarrassing given how low the wage is. Like, in Australia, the wages are high, but at least we're still friendly. Like, you guys are like, seriously, $6 an hour, just what do you want? What would you have? It's like, if you ask that again, I'm going to stab you.
Right? Okay. What would you have? A better job not serving you.
This week we're talking about the world's worst prison, and Ben, you are going to be the first one in the lineup. What are you going to...
Yes, I am. So... I think the three of us could appreciate this could get very miserable very quickly. So, first of all, I went to look for the smallest prison in the world.
Yes. Which
I think Barry found as well. So, there is a Channel Island called Sark, S-A-R-K, and it looks like a splodge of paint in the sea. It's a great shape.
Yeah.
You can see it from above, and it's all like little crisscross fields.
And to be clear, it's just 2 square miles.
Yeah, it's tiny.
2 square miles?
Yeah.
Wow.
It has a population of about 500 people.
Correct.
It's like an Australian backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but also that is the population that spread over about 300 square miles in Australia.
True.
It's got a...
But we're full, please don't come.
It's got a fascinating history because it basically, throughout history, keeps getting exchanged between the British and the French and the British and the French and the British and the French. And then the Nazis turned up in World War II and went, oh, we'll have it. And it was one of those sort of collaborating islands. It's also considered to be the last feudal state in Europe.
Oh, yeah, it's still on Norman law.
Up until 2006, it was a feudal state.
Yeah.
And then eventually, universal suffrage and democracy were introduced.
You're only allowed tractors and horse-drawn vehicles on the road in Sark. There's no cars allowed. And in 2011, Sark was designated as a dark sky community. It's like where there's not that much man-made light, so the sky above it is really, really starry.
So that basically means, so what I really love is if you had like, what's the place where astronomers live called? An observatory.
Yes.
If you had like, you've got,
I don't think they live in the place astronomers live.
They live in an observatory, like the Beatles in Help.
The boom with a telescope inside it.
Yeah.
You think astronomers are like the lighthouse guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Like every night they come out and be like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, just if any UFOs get too close to the planet and then they sort of like let a light round.
Yeah, that's funny.
The prison was built in 1856, and it's this tiny little barrel-roofed prison with two cells, just in case.
Two cells?
Yeah.
Wow. How many per cell? What do we got?
Well, one is 6 foot by 6 foot, and the other is 6 by 8, so I'd hope it's just one.
Yeah, but going on to the other prisons we'd looked at, could be more.
Yeah.
That sounds like every hotel I've stayed in.
Yeah, the prison is now sponsored by EasyJet. Yeah. The last... Well, you tell me, Dan, when do you think the last serious crime took place in Sark?
The last serious crime?
Yeah.
Apart from granting women the vote? Yeah.
Collaborating with the Nazis.
Yeah, okay, so between those two...
Oh, man, I love it. This is why people shouldn't compliment me. last serious crime. They're unpaid policemen, so you've got to say it's been, like, at least a lifetime. So what, like, 1956?
Oh, you've gone a bit far back in time. That's 1990.
But 1990.
Still 30 years.
Yeah, it's a brilliant crime.
All right.
It's a crime that fits exactly on this show. So, in 1990, an unemployed French nuclear physicist... The worst kind of nuclear physicist, I think we can all agree.
And let's be clear, he mustn't have been that good, because in 1990, the French were massive into nukes at the time. Yeah. So he must have been the only unemployed French nuclear physicist.
Well, I don't really like a nuclear physicist who goes, what I do, it is art.
I do not love it anymore, I smash my reactor!
Yeah. The champignon cloud.
Lighting up a Gauloise. Yeah. In the core.
A chap called André Gardes. He launched a one-man invasion of the island, nice. Claiming to be the rightful lord of Sark. He rode across the island armed with a semi-automatic weapon, and then put up two posters explaining his intentions.
He's doing a fringe shirt.
Yeah. Well, that's how we get people into our venue.
Wow.
Free show.
Yeah.
What's the population of the island?
500.
Okay. I like his chances.
Yeah. Well, clearly he must have forgotten to take the safety catch or must have left the safety catch on his automatic weapon, because he was stopped when the constable caught up with him, punched him on the nose and arrested him.
Nice.
So it was quite a damp squib in the end, what happened. And then since then, the only people who've occasionally been locked up are the odd occasional drunk or an inebriated tourist.
I think that was just another, French military defeat there.
Yeah.
A real little one. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd been reading from the Wile E. Coyote strategy guide.
I think that sounds like one of those who would win in a fight, like a polar bear or a moose.
Yeah.
And you go, who would win in a fight? One French nuclear physicist armed with a semi-automatic or the entire population of Sark?
Sark, one French nuclear physicist, nil.
Yeah.
And that is a qualifier for the Canifa World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
So next we go to Mexico. There was quite a few prisons like this one, but I picked up this one called Carreso Queitumal, which hasn't seen any violence in many, many, many years, and it's because it's got a lovely arts and crafts programme. Now, there's loads of different prisons I looked at, like open prisons, and Switzerland and Austria and Norway are really famed for like their open rehabilitative prisons, which are, I guess, good prisons, but also not a proper prison. When you've got Wi-Fi and, you can read the works of Nietzsche whilst lounging down, having grapes peeled for you by...
Ben's gone full Tory today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a prison. You want it to be prison-y.
I always think about being a prison warden, right? Kind of like, you want to have the...
You always think about being a prison warden.
I always do. It's 6:45 a.m. when my one-year-old wakes me up.
Yeah.
I go...
Rattling the bars of his crib with his drink cup.
Yeah, he's got his little baseball that he rattles off the wall.
His harmonica lessons are coming on.
Just scratching the number of days he's been alive in the bars.
Yeah, we initially put like a lion toy in his cot, but he saw that was the alpha in the prison, so he just ripped its head clean off.
The lion started sleeping in the bottom bunk, and you're like, oh, jeez. We're gonna change
this. Yeah. So this is like a reformy prison.
It's a reformy prison, like Mexico, which you wouldn't expect.
Why would you not expect that from the Mexicans?
Because the Mexican prisons tend to be fairly brutal.
But that guy escaped in that one.
Far as we know. El Chapo.
Yeah, El Chapo escaped like twice. He was like the main guy.
But he did like... I can't believe that people are still managing to tunnel out of prisons. We've had the Great Escape, we've had Shawshank Redemption. Everyone knows, look for fucking tunnels. Why are people still getting away with this?
But how do you look for tunnels? By tunneling, right? Okay. It just creates more and more problems.
Yeah, okay,
They need to stop building prisons on top of large hamster colonies. That's the real issue.
Without the hamster colonies, these inmates are going to be bored.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
You ever seen an inmate? They're just like, fuck, man, I don't care. Just bring me a hamster. Yeah. I'm sick of all these books.
Yeah, that's all they do. Just sit in their solitary, peeling another hamster. Then he's at
root. That's so dark. Yeah.
So there's quite a few of them that have what this Mexican prison has, which is that they focus on arts and crafts. So if you go in there, the prisoners are wearing civilian clothes. There's like a marketplace area where they sell necklaces and hammocks and purses and carved wooden pieces. They'll sell fruit and treats.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, if anything, it's a little bit too much like going on holiday and you're just getting, you know, too many hawkers there.
Are they sending them to each other? Are they selling them to, is it like open, can members of the public go in?
Both, to each other, to members of the public, to any guests that comes along. There's a conjugal hotel.
Ooh.
Yeah, where you pay $1 a night and you can have some sweet, sweet, sexy time with your visiting partner.
Slash hamster.
$1 a night?
Yeah.
That's very reasonable.
It really is.
Yes.
The TripAdvisor is off the scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, location, not great. Actually in the middle of a prison. But yeah. Value for money, incredible.
The thing that I love with this prison is that there's been almost no violence there for almost 15 years now.
That's good.
Because as well as having an excellent arts and crafts program, they have a boxing ring in the prison. And if ever there are any beefs between any of the prisoners, the chief warden goes, right, you two, strip to the waist, here are the gloves, get in the ring. And it rarely goes more than two rounds.
Really?
And they just beat the shit out of each other, shake hands, out they get, on with our day.
Ah, nice.
It's lovely. So instead of chess boxing, it's craft boxing. Boxing.
Yeah,
you gotta wonder which inmate does the holding up the sign. Yeah. in your bikini.
Yeah,
it's like round two, and they're like, ugh. I don't know about this.
Next up, we're going to Ottersville, the Federal Correctional Institution of Ottersville, which is in upstate New York.
Is this Ottersville like otters?
No, Otisville.
Okay, fine, because I had an image of an adorable prison run by otters.
Yeah. Oh, lock me up there immediately. It is the American prison that has the highest population of Orthodox Jews in the country. Because, obviously, Jews can commit crimes as well. But they need to make sure that they keep up with their kosher laws and they still pray three times a day. Its most famous prisoner at the moment is Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen.
Oh, wow.
There are seders on Passover.
Nice.
According to the New York magazine, Otisville still offers one of the more traditional seders in the prison system. So, like, you know, one of my favourite jokes in the life of Brian was when there's a guy getting crucified and then Brian's next and was like, excuse me, this is the Jewish section. And it sort of feels like that, but for prison. One of the inmates, Earl Seth David, he says, for a Jewish person, there is no place like Otisville. There's kosher meals, religious classes, weekly Shabbat services, and a shared space where Torah scrolls are locked up every night. So that they've got kinship with the prisoners.
Does that mean that the Jewish mums are all going, oh, my son, he got into Otisville?
Yeah! But I think for my selection, we're going to stay in America and we are going to go to Iowa. And we're going to go to a place called Pottawatomie County. And it has a prison that has been closed since 1969 but is almost unique, and it's called the Squirrel Cage.
This is the one run by otters, right?
Yes, it is.
To put squirrels in.
Exactly, and the hamsters are still stewed on a bed of avocados. Basically, it is a round prison. The cells are divided off like petals on a flower, and the prison cells revolve slowly like a lazy Susan. So basically, the prison wardens don't have to move anywhere.
So this is a panopticon?
Well, no, not really, no, because the way the panopticon works is it's a central pillar in the middle,
yeah.
And then the prison is all around them,
yeah.
And the prison doesn't move. But this, instead, the prison cells are on the Lazy Susan, and you stand outside it.
You stand outside it?
Yes, and the Lazy Susan goes round and round like a prisoner Yo Sushi.
Or like the Generation game, where you go,
rapist. Yeah. There was the murderer, there was the...
and the rapist is going, I'm not a rapist, I'm a cuddly toy.
It was one of actually 18 revolving prisons that were built, also known as human rotaries.
This was the 60s, you say?
Yes.
Human rotaries.
Yeah, no, it was closed in the 60s. It was built in 1881. A patent that was developed for them declared, "The object of our invention is to produce a jail in which prisoners can be controlled without the necessity of personal contact between them and the jailer. Maximum security with minimum jailer attention. As one deputy put it, if a jailer could count and he had a trustee he could trust, he could control the jail." What is specifically so fucking weird and so fucking horrible about this is that it was a triple-decker squirrel jail. So it was basically a jail meets the Generation game meets a Pez dispenser.
Oh, nice. No.
And it might not be the most cramped of jails, it might not be the most relaxed and open of jails, it might not be the most kosher of jails, but just for being so bizarre and having the utility for the prison guard as its primary objective and any sense of well-being or rehabilitation for these poor prisoners as its lowest priority, it's got to be my choice.
Not great if you've got motion sickness.
Yeah, I don't know how quickly it rotates. I'd love it if they occasionally sped it up and it was like a rotor at the funfair and they just get stuck to the walls.
Or like a zoetrope.
Yeah.
If you arranged all the prisoners in certain poses, you slid around really fine, it'd be like a cartoon taking place in front of you.
Yeah. Either that, or you could just have one prisoner and spin around really, really quick and it'll look like he was in all of the cells.
Separate his blood from his water.
Yeah. It seems like you just put the guy in the middle. And then, like, you'd get the panopticon and the spin. Yeah. We all know the word panopticon, by the way. Isn't tertiary education great?
Yeah. So, for our listeners who aren't aware what a panopticon is it, like you say, it's a cylindrical prison, if you like, with the cells on the walls around the outside and a central tower, so with the guard in it. So that in theory you only need one guard to be able to see all the prisoners, and the idea is the prisoners won't know when they're being watched because you could obscure them with curtains or blinds and things.
Well, that's it. Like the theory of the panopticon is you don't actually need anyone in the central tower. That's like the whole point. It's self-regulating because you can be seen at every time based on that constant scrutiny. Yeah, it'll modify your behaviour.
Developed by a guy called Jeremy Bentham, who is all about utilitarianism and sort of like the best possible utility for the most number of people. And I imagine British listeners might know this, but non-British listeners probably won't. This is a great fact about him. His full embalmed body is on display at, I think it's UCL. So he's an 18th century philosopher who's been embalmed for about 250 years.
Fidel Castro was imprisoned in a panopticon.
Mm.
Yeah, there were about four of them built in Cuba in the 20s. I think they were 5 stories tall with 93 cells in them. By the time Castro was imprisoned in Gerardo Machado, it had 6,000 men in it, and I'll tell you, 5 times 93 is 465, so if there was one person in each cell, that's how many should have been in the prison at the time.
Yeesh.
Yeah. But at least it was stationary.
we got a rotating thing. It's like Centrepoint Tower in Sydney. It's like a tower.
So it should have been a restaurant rather than a prison.
Yeah, that'd be a good prison. Like a prison suspended, like, you know, it's like on a massive tower, like 500 feet in the air.
Yeah.
That'd be a good prison. You're not getting out of that shit.
Yeah, if they reappropriate the BT Tower in London, because that used to have a rotating restaurant at the top.
Yeah, it did. But I don't know. I worry about prisoners making parachutes out of their bed sheets.
They don't want to tunnel out of that place.
Yeah, problem solved.
Finally, we figured out the tunneling issue. Yeah. Prisons on stilts. I want a bit hipster, you know. Because like American prisons, everyone knows America's got prisons, right? They love a fucking prison. But I've gone Papua New Guinea.
Ooh,
yes, there we go. And I like that especially because when you were saying what's near Australia, you were like, there's Indonesia and New Zealand. Nah, mate. Closest neighbour, Papua New Guinea.
PNG.
PNG.
So it's in Port Moresby, well, just outside Port Moresby.
Good, the place in Papua New Guinea we've heard of.
Exactly. Is there more? I don't know. Please don't be angry at me, Papua New Guinea. Yeah. I call you PNG like we're old friends.
Yeah. But little Papua New Guinea fact, it has the most number of languages of any country on Earth.
Does it?
So it's an island and it has something mad like 1,000 languages.
Really?
Yeah, which must make prison admin very difficult.
Yes. Well, this is like part of... Because the other thing, when I was like selecting like the toughest one, right... I don't know if you guys have watched a lot of prison documentaries on YouTube, but pretty racial, the old prison breakdown. You know, definitely people break off into skin colours.
News flash, peeps.
Absolutely. Don't know if you've seen American History X, but yeah, that. But yeah, so I was like, as like a white dude, I was like, well, I reckon like the best prisons for me would be like Scandinavia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like I'm not like as white as they would like, but I'm also like not Jewish, so I reckon I'd be fine. Like I'm just gonna slot in there.
Oh, how convenient for you that they're also the most liberal and relaxed prisons. Well, skateboard in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Excuse me, can you just keep us assembling IKEA furniture? It's just so relaxing.
No, but that's the problem. If you like, if you're in a prison in Scandinavia, then they bake you a cake with an Allen key inside it, and you can disassemble the entire prison.
I don't know if people know much about Papua New Guinea. I assume not. It is a very violent place. Like, it's quite dangerous, Papua New Guinea. Like up there with like the most dangerous cities in the world. Port Moresby. I was looking up, apparently it's gotten better recently, but like in my memory it was like kind of like top five.
Yeah, right.
Like my childhood. Like the other ones are like legitimate war zones. You know, so you're like, wow. And then Venezuela, obviously, like Caracas is wild. Yeah, yeah.
We usually have like Honduras and El Salvador cities. I think we're both pretty high up in it.
Yeah, so like it's like a very, very violent place, and this is like the most violent prison in that country. So I'm like, this is going to be pretty real.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, you know, spoiler alert, it is like and it was built in the 60s and it was featured on World's Toughest Prisons season 2 episode 3.
All right, so got in good and early.
Yeah, I was like, I thought like the first season that'd be your obvious ones. Again, yeah, the hipster yeah. one, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like Kings of Leon before Sex is on Fire. That's the vibe I'm at.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically about this prison, the one thing that I can't get over is the holding, the people who are yet to be tried. Like, they are just held in the same bit. There's no differentiation if you've been convicted of a crime.
Oh, wow.
Or if you're awaiting trial, you're just... Also, the only thing is the uniform. I have a slightly different shade of blue. Oh,
right. So wherever you are, you're a naughty Smurf.
Exactly. Like, a light blue, you're like, this might happen, and the dark blue is like, yeah, you did it.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're just held in the exact same cells. Basically, the guy who visited it was like, I've never seen anything like this before, because people can be held up to 2 years because the Papua New Guinea court system is quite backlogged.
Mm, yeah.
As you'd imagine, given the violence. And yeah, it's a prison where everyone's held together. There's just weapons. Like, if you're held in solitary confinement, the guards don't feed you. You have to rely on other prisoners to feed you. Because the people awaiting trial, they sleep in a different bit, but everybody's just out all the time. Like, it's not segregated at all. It's kind of like everybody hits the yard at the same time. Even in, like, the cells you're being held before you're tried, there's no mattresses, there's no beds. It's just a 1 meter square of concrete, and that's just where you sleep. And, like, Papua New Guinea is, like, tropical, 30 degree plus days. This is not pleasant.
No.
You know, in dire need of air conditioning kind of vibe. And yeah, so with the weapons.
I mean, listen, it sounds bad, but it's not the Circle Line or Rush Hour, is it?
It's not. Nothing's that hot, nor as dangerous.
No.
But yeah, apparently just for food, like they just had knives, like just proper metal knives, which the.
To eat.
Yeah, just like to use as cutlery.
Oh, to eat with. Sorry, I thought they were just being fed knives.
Fed knives. That's how tough these guys are.
It's a prison specifically for sword swallowers.
Yeah, they eat like 5 knives, shit out a sword.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's actually the winner of Britain's Got Talent.
Yes. He's got diarrhea, it's just epes today.
the breakout. It was known as the breakout prison. There were breakouts, mass breakouts.
That is not a good nickname for a prison.
Breakout prison, you know. Everyone gets to leave. No tunnels necessary, from what I could read. No tunnels. They just went out. They were just like, oh, I've had enough. And they just go.
Breakout prison could mean that it's just breaking into the public consciousness and it's on the cusp of an award.
Yeah. The breakout prison of 2015. Yeah. Mamana. Oh my God, Mamana. Thanks so much. Yeah. Weirdly, a lot of the inmates are out to accept the award. Very strange. But yeah, it was 2005, 2007, 2010. There are more mass breakouts in this place than there are Olympics. Like, that's a lot, you know? And this is the bit. I was reading all about this, but apparently there's been some reforms recently. It has been improved by Kitty Kiko.
Great.
That's the new warden of the prison. This is the bit that I found very troubling. So he came in 2013 and he's like, look, if you trust me, then I will treat you better. But you have to trust me. You have to stop the violence. And he allowed them to do an exchange of gifts. So like the different tribes within the prison exchange like chicken and stuff like that. I don't know why there's just chickens rolling around the prison, but like whatever. If you got to feed the solitary guys, maybe have some livestock.
Yeah.
I don't think they're emotional support animals. So they just do like an exchange of gifts, like would be a traditional tribal ceremony in the prison. And then he's like, if you guys trust me to stop the violence. So they did the exchange. Then he stood there and they all just brought their weapons out and laid them at his feet. That was an actual thing that happened. All the prisoners just kind of had all their, like, shivs and knives and, you know, epes, you know, just, like, coming out and just laid them at his feet.
I really hope he made a replica of the Iron Throne with them.
That would have been amazing. Just, like, melt them all down.
Yeah.
And then since then, it's been a lot better. There's been a... I hate this so much. There's been a yoga program instead, which has apparently made a huge difference. And if you're sleeping on 1 meter squared concrete, I guess being flexible, not the worst.
That new prison warder, I want to try and channel his energy when I go into the Christmas gig season. Just whatever he's got to calm those men.
Apparently, this is what I find a bit much. Now the prisoners, some of them are just let out on Sundays. Just to go around the town and they participate in the march against violence in Papua New Guinea with the governor.
If
I was the governor, I'd be like, nah. Absolutely not. You don't get to come and just walk next to me. I don't care how many chickens you gave the other guy. So that's Bomana. I don't know if that's kind of like an uplifting note that doesn't make it the world's worst prison anymore. But I think initially, at least, you got to be like, wow, this place was just crazy.
Sort of when was it that he... Was it 2013?
2013, and it's gotten better since then.
All right, pre-2013. That's fine. We can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll set your own parameters.
2009 breakout. More than 50 prisoners escaped from my prison in Bomana. After wardens failed to show up for work and police were busy guarding a rugby match. But the thing that I like most about it, they said most of the 54 inmates were still at large. So 54 in one fleeing.
Yeah.
And I just like the official... told them that we've got about 50 still on the run. About. That's my favourite bit. Just like, I don't know exactly how many are still on the run, but it's about 50.
Yeah. It's a really long-running game of hide-and-seek.
If we get 50 back in, we nailed it.
On both counts, they need to round up those prisoners.
Yeah.
But it was known as the breakout prison, and now it's, you know, yoga, and people are just released on Sundays to go chill with the governor. Can you imagine being in solitary confinement and just being like, hey man, please, I need food to the inmate. Like, the guards are just like, dude, we don't care. Apparently it's like a roll call every day, and they're just out in the yard, and it's just like everybody, and there's like 3 guards.
And now it's sun salutations and...
Yeah.
Well, because basically what it's saying, when you are awaiting trial, you basically have to go into that yard and you have to mingle.
Yeah. Like, mingle, like, in that way, like, when you're doing a gig where it's just like, oh, this guy's doing a trial spot. Like, that's the mingle going on. There's all these, like, proper inmates who have been working the prison for years.
Or it's a bit like Freshers Week at uni, where you get to go and meet, like, the existing students. You get a... get a feel for the different like societies and things.
Yeah,
because you know you might be back to join them shortly.
But then you always make the wrong decision and hook on to the one person who 30 seconds later like, I need to get rid of this person.
Yeah,
and they're with you for the next 3 years.
It's been a pleasure hosting this podcast with you for 3 years, Ben. I read about the so-called nicest prison in the world, Bastoy, which is an island prison. It's home to 115 prisoners, but it's a low security prison. So it's for prisoners who've committed really bad crimes but are reforming. And you actually, I think you have to apply to go there. And it's basically a community. Prisoners live in shared houses with their own bedrooms and shared facilities. They can wear their own clothes, visit a prison shop, library or church. There's a lovely beach and a pine forest. There's skiing. You can go to
skiing.
In your spare time, you can go fishing, play football, work out. There's a movie room, weekly courses and lectures and events and concerts. And the prisoners run the ferry service to and from the island as well.
Hang on, sorry, this is a centre park. So yeah. A prison.
Most of the officers leave the prison at night, apparently.
What? No. Oh, okay.
What do you mean? That isn't a prison then.
Yeah.
That's stuff. If there's no guards, it's just a bunch of dudes hanging out.
Apart from one meal a day, the prisoners cook for themselves.
What?
Yeah. They Norway
that means
call
that's
it
a chop.
I Norway call it an ecological prison. They chop trees for fuel. They run a farm. They do training programs, learning new skills to prepare for release. And like I say, they have to apply to come there. And if they try and escape, they're sent back to one of the
regular prisons
again. So,
which is actually just like an IKEA showroom.
Yeah, try to find your way out.
Yeah.
They just peel up all the arrows off the floor. You have no idea where you are. In 2015, one guy did escape using a surfboard and a paddle.
If you can escape something with a surfboard, it's not a prison. That's just stand-up paddleboarding. That's all that is.
He also had 4 ounces of weed on there as well.
Apparently, though, Norway has the lowest reoffending rate in Scandinavia. Only 20% of prisoners are reconvicted. By contrast, in America, over 50% of prisoners are back in prison within 3 years of release.
50%?
Yeah.
Oh, the American prison system is very scary. Look into that stuff.
That's a study of 29 American states.
Hmm.
But Norway also has a continuing care policy. So they have, when you get out of prison, they have services to help them with housing and employment and healthcare and stuff like that. As prisons go, sounds lovely. And
That prison sounds precisely like the camp I got sent on in year 9. Exactly like, we got to turn you into a man. That's what that sounds like.
Well, that's it. As you know, as a self-employed performer, if I like think, oh, I think I'm going to have a lean year next year, I think I'm just going to go to Oslo and commit a minor offence.
Yeah.
You got to apply for that one. Not everybody gets in. It's like a paid venue.
It's only 100 and whatever it is, 115 prisoners. It's very exclusive.
That is very exclusive.
Yeah. There's similar prisons in Brazil run by a group called APAC, the Association for Protection and Assistance to Convicts. Again, prisoners wear their own clothes, prepare their own food. This one, literally, there are no guards or weapons. The inmates are in charge of opening and closing the doors to the prison. Whatever you think about how bad the regular prisons in Norway are, imagine how bad the regular prisons in Brazil are.
Oh, yeah.
Gang rivals, riots, the world's fourth largest prison population in Brazil. They're massively overcrowded and violent places. And so these prisons run by APAC, they put their trust in the prisoners because if they offend or break the rules, they're getting sent back into the regular system.
Right.
One guy, David Rodriguez de Oliveira, he's the guy who's in charge of opening and closing the doors to this prison. He said, I have no thought of escaping. I'm near the end and I've almost paid for my crime. They put their trust in me and it's my responsibility to guard the door. My next step is conditional release where I can go out once a week. I have my family to think of. I wouldn't jeopardise that.
That's interesting. There's quite a few I looked at that have built like specific family rooms. There's one I looked at in America, which at first seems lovely, and they basically got this lovely, well-decorated sort of 5-star family room, and they put on daddy-daughter dancing competitions. Wow. And they're like, if you fuck up in the prison, then you don't get to go to this competition. And apparently that has made behaviour be impeccable because all the dads want to be able to dance with their daughter.
I guess the lesson with all of these is that solitary confinement and giving people nothing to live for is not the way to run a prison, is what all of these things are showing us. These APAC prisons, again, have lower rates of recidivism, and you mightn't love this.
Sure.
They, in a similar vibe to the yoga, they paint lots of slogans on the walls, including things like, the man enters, the crime stays outside, and no one escapes from love.
No one escapes from
Shut
love.
Shut it down.
No one escapes from love sounds very terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, if you receive that, like, as a person outside of a prison, you'd be like, my Tinder date's going to kill me. As your Tinder bio, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah. The oldest prisoner ever in the world is a guy called Brij Bihari Pandey in India. He was released in 2011 at the age of 108.
What?
Wow.
How long had he been banged up for?
So he'd technically only served a 2-year sentence, but he'd been in jail since 1987 because they were waiting to get the trial to happen. So it didn't happen for 2 decades, and he was eventually given a life sentence in 2009 and was released in 2011 following concerns for his failing health, as you'd imagine.
You can't give someone over 100 a life sentence. That's just a dick.
Well,
no, but he clearly looked at that and went, challenge accepted.
His crime was he had been a priest and dreamed of becoming a high priest at a temple, and another guy got the job instead of him. And so they had a fight between his supporters and the other guy's supporters, and several people were killed. He wasn't imprisoned for as long as Charles Fossard, a French immigrant who lived in Australia.
Australia, the original prison.
Yeah, well, he has the record for the longest prison sentence ever served.
Wow.
He was locked up in the Ararat Lunatic Asylum for nearly 71 years.
Wait, Ballarat?
Ararat. Yeah, he was 71 years. He died at the age of 92. In 1903, he killed a guy called William Ford in Skye, in Australia. He was only charged with vagrancy when police picked him up 30 miles away, but then he was linked to the crime.
Right, when he got a life sentence for murder.
Yeah, he was only 21 at the time. He was declared insane and spent the rest of his life in this prison cell, in this ward.
Does that count as a prison sentence if he was locked up? Because he was locked up for being crazy as well as being locked up for being a murderer.
Yeah, I think quite a few of these are similar. For example, Bill Wallace, another Australian guy, he spent 63 years in the same place, in J Ward of Ararat Lunatic Asylum. Technically was never charged with a crime or went to court. He was arrested in 1926, suspected of killing a man in a cafe in Melbourne. And he just refused to answer any questions and was declared insane by the doctors. And so he was just sentenced to be held by the governor, who had the power to hold him for as long as he wanted. Wallace just never talked to doctors about the crime and thus was never released. On his 100th birthday, the public petitioned to have him released, and the Australian government agreed, and Wallace refused to leave, saying, "Don't be fucking silly, I live here."
Oh man, that makes me homesick.
Yeah. I read about some famous prisons, because, you know, there are quite a few of them. When you think of famous prisons...
Alcatraz,
the big one. So, it was a military fort before. It was Alcatraz Citadel. It was built in the 1800s. But they began using it as the disciplinary barracks for soldiers who committed crimes and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they stopped using it as a fort. Then they kept using it as a military prison. And eventually, in the 30s, it became a federal prison. It was only operating for 29 years.
Mm.
Most famous prisoner held in Alcatraz?
The Birdman.
Oh, very, very good.
Really?
Well, he'd be up there. The real Birdman of Alcatraz was a guy called Robert Stroud, and he was a violent offender who'd killed 2 people, tried to kill a 3rd one, and never kept any birds at Alcatraz. His big deal was he kept birds and so on. He did that at Leavenworth Prison before his transfer to Alcatraz. Wasn't allowed to keep them in Alcatraz at all.
Yeah, obviously the other most famous inmate was Sean Connery.
Yes, exactly. The Birdman, when he was in Alcatraz to pass the time, instead he wrote a history of the penal system, but the historian of Alcatraz doesn't have quite the same, romantic resonance.
No, it doesn't. I love people who did that. I can't quite remember the story, but there's a brilliant book about, not the first, I think it's the first Oxford dictionary, so not like Dr. Johnson, but like the first one where it's, you know, it's a properly big tome, and there was a guy who had a real skill for etymology and, you know, describing exactly what a word meant, but he committed a couple of murders, and so he got banged up, but the guys who were compiling the Oxford English Dictionary were like, "We are behind on this," and the greatest dictionary brain is locked up, so he just would keep going along to the prison every month or so and go, "Right, here's a new pile of words that need defining. See you next month."
Were the words murder, blood, knife, poison, corpse.
Can you imagine how brutal it would be if one of the words was innocent?
In 1963, Stroud, the Birdman, met Burt Lancaster to talk about
his upcoming role. And he never got to see the film or indeed read the book about him. But he did talk about the fact that he never got parole because he was an admitted homosexual. And Lancaster says, Stroud said, let's face it, I'm 73 years old. Does that answer your question about whether I would be a dangerous homosexual? The other famous inmate is Al Capone. Al Capone arrived in Alcatraz 10 days after it opened. Like, he was one of the first to... He was, like, the major in Fawlty Towers, I imagine.
Early adopter.
Yeah, yeah. He was moved from prison in Atlanta. He'd already been put in prison in Atlanta. But apparently, he was, like, the alpha in this place, Atlanta. He was getting all the preferential treatment he wanted. So they shipped him out to Alcatraz, and he spent 5 years there.
Because he was mob, wasn't he? Al Capone was mob.
Yeah. But he was done for tax law. And he got out sort of on, you know, compassionate grounds because he was... going very mad with syphilis by 1939. 36 people tried to escape Alcatraz on 14 occasions. 2 men tried it twice. 23 people were caught, 6 shot, 2 drowned, and 5 others missing, presumed dead, because no one has ever officially escaped.
Sorry, Alcatraz. You should have prefaced that with, if you don't want to hear the results,
yes, look away now. There was a guy called Alvin Karpis. He was the longest serving inmate in Alcatraz. The prison was open for 29 years. He was there for 26 years for kidnapping and robbery. He was a member of the Ma Barker's gang. And he was, apparently, he was America's public enemy number one for a while. J. Edgar Hoover himself personally brought him in.
Wow.
And he was kept in Alcatraz until 1962 when he was transferred to a penitentiary in Washington. And there he befriended a young inmate they called Little Charlie. And he gave him guitar lessons. That was Charles Manson. Longest serving inmate in Alcatraz taught Charles Manson how to play guitar.
Wow.
That's superb.
Yeah. I also read about the Bastille.
Mm-hmm.
Originally also a fortress. It was built to protect Paris from the east. The Bastille was really nice to be kept in. The Marquis de Sade, when he was imprisoned there, he had... an elaborate wardrobe, artwork, tapestries, perfumes, several servants, a small library, card games, and a wine cellar.
Oh, if ever I'm imprisoned with a wine cellar, yeah, yes, please.
That's where you do your tunneling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the perfect way to stop people escaping by tunneling. Just kind of like, we're almost there. Ooh, a Chateau Neuf du Pape, 1874.
It was originally, like, under Louis XIV, I think a lot of aristocrats got kept there, people who annoyed him. Under Louis XV and XVI, there was a bit more varied prisoners in there. But they were it was stormed by the revolutionary mob in 1789 because they wanted the gunpowder in the fortress. And they released, how many prisoners do you reckon they sprung?
Oh, it's really not very many. It's like 4?
It's 7.
7.
Yeah.
The storming of the Bastille is a little less impressive when you think they only let 7 people out. The revolutionary government demolished it. It took them quite a long time to... They had like a committee, had to have meetings about what they were going to do with it.
Right.
It took a long time for them to eventually take it apart. They transported souvenirs of the prison around France as like symbols of the revolution. And the key to the Bastille was given to George Washington by Lafayette. In one of the offstage scenes in Hamilton. It's been kept in his house in Mount Vernon. Do you know what replaced the Bastille when they knocked it down?
Was it a Futuroscope?
No.
Euro Disney.
In 1793, they put up a fountain with a statue of Isis in it.
Isis?
Yeah. The Egyptian goddess.
Yeah, me and Dan both looked at each other and go, do you want the joke?
Yeah. Then Napoleon didn't like it, and he also didn't like the revolutionary vibe, because he was like, hang on, I'm an emperor now, I don't need revolutions. So he thought about building the Arc de Triomphe on the Bastille. Instead, that wasn't very popular, so he decided instead to replace that with a huge bronze statue of an elephant.
That's good.
They never got around to doing it. They built a large plaster, like a holding statue version of the elephant, a big plaster elephant, and that just began to peel and
stuff. A huge plaster version of the elephants. They literally built a white elephant.
They literally did.
Right.
And eventually it was removed in the 1840s, and now it's the Place de la Bastille. And the other famous prison in song?
Oh, God, Folsom Prison.
Folsom Prison, yeah.
Ah, Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah, yeah. In California. Obviously, appeared in Johnny Cash's song, and he performed there twice. So the song came first, and about 10 years later, he did a couple of concerts there.
Yeah, and he did concerts in San Quentin as well.
Yes, indeed. And the Folsom Prison Blues was number one on the country music chart for 4 weeks. The album was in the top 200 for 122 weeks.
It's a hell of a live recording.
Yeah, it's amazing. They intended to do a 40th anniversary tribute concert in the same cafeteria in the prison in 2008 with his original drummer appearing because he was still alive, W.S. Fluke Holland, which is a great drummer name.
Amazing name.
It was going to be streamed on the internet. It had to be cancelled over filming rights, media access, and, you guessed it, security concerns. although there was a 50th anniversary concert in Folsom Prison this year. It's been filmed for a Netflix special by the California band Los Tigres del Norte.
God, everyone's getting a fucking Netflix special. Yeah.
Folsom had some famous inmates as well. Sonny Barker, who was the leader of Hell's Angels. Charles Manson was there for a bit. And Tim Leary.
What?
LSD Tim Leary.
Yeah, yeah, Tibetan Book of the Dead.
That dude. This is sort of a sidebar, but I love the story of how Tim Leary ended up in Folsom Prison. He was arrested in 1965 for marijuana possession, and he was arrested again 3 years later. Similar deal. The Supreme Court overturned his first conviction. And on the day it overturned that first conviction, he announced he was going to stand as for governor of California against Ronald Reagan.
Right.
His campaign slogan was "Come together, join the party," and he took part in the bed-in with Yoko and John Lennon, and he wrote "Come Together" for Tim Leary as a campaign song. Then, as a Beatles fan's mind is blown.
That's tremendous.
He then, in 1970, got a 10-year sentence for that second offence. Arrived in prison, not Folsom at this point, and had to take several psychological tests. He had obviously designed some of these tests himself, including the Leary interpersonal behaviour inventory. So he answered them in such a way they seemed to be very conforming.
Would they say, "Okay, Mr. Leary, we're now going to ask you to take the Leary test"?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, he wrote in the words of Bernie Sanders, he wrote the damn bill. He then was like, he conveyed the idea that he was really into forestry and gardening, was assigned work as a gardener in a low security prison, and promptly escaped. The best bit is, he said that his escape was a humorous prank, and he left a note for the people to find, which included the newspaper clipping of Reagan defending his decision to keep Leary under minimal security. But my candidate for the world's worst prison is the Mamertine Prison, which is an ancient Roman prison. And so the Romans were sort of nearly the first people to properly use prison as a way of punishing people. It hadn't really been codified in any way.
Or was it before that? Was it just lashes, or killing people?
You'd detain people in them for a certain way, but they started using it as the punishment itself. But it was consisted on two underground cells. The ancient historian Sallust said it was 12 feet underground, and he described it as disgusting and vile by reason of the filth, the darkness, and the stench. It was built in 600 BC, or thereabouts. Rome's enemies were kept there, like Vercingetorix, the leader of the Gauls. He was kept there. Simon Bar Gioras, who defended Jerusalem against the Romans. And apparently both the apostles Peter and Paul were kept there as well. And there is a church on the side now which has a little altar dedicated to them.
If you were an apostle of Jesus and he didn't do a prison breakout for you, you'd feel a little bit shortchanged, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
This would have been after, right? They would have been kept before.
It's Jesus, mate.
he could have come back. The lower room is the room that I really think is the worst prison. It's called the Tullianum. It was within, like I say, the sewer system. It could only be reached by lowering or dropping the prisoner through a hole in the ground into it.
That's sick. Can you imagine? Just like, you go to the lower level, what if you just like push them and it's like a trap door left? Just straight into the sewer.
It was just literally a hole in this stone floor. There's a metal gate on top of it now. In the upper room above it, there's a stone that apparently has the imprint of St. Peter's head in it from when he was hurled down into the lower room. This room only measured 6.5 foot high, 30 foot long, and 22 foot wide. You could have however many prisoners crammed into it any one time. An iron door at the end of that room opened into the city's main sewer, the Cloaca Maxima. and they would literally dump bodies into it.
They're called the Cloaca Maxima. Yeah. That is a grim, grim name.
Bodies would be dumped in there and sluiced down into the River Tiber.
When your prison is a hole in the ground and it's literally next door to something called a cloaca. So our candidates this week for the world's worst prison are Ben's suggestion of the squirrel cage in Iowa, the revolving three-story prison. Dan's suggestion of Bomana Prison in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea, literally known as the breakout prison. And my suggestion of the Mamertine Prison, a hole in the ground in the sewers of ancient Rome. In terms of disgust level, I think I would least like to be kept in the Mamertine Prison. No natural light, literally next to a sewer. As someone who gets carsick, I would not enjoy being kept in the squirrel cage.
Oh, imagine being kept in, like, the squirrel cloaca.
Yeah, imagine. But I think in terms of worst prison covering all the bases, as a terrible place to be imprisoned, but also a place that functionally is not operating well as a prison.
Yes.
I think it's going to be Bomana in Papua New Guinea.
Yes.
It sort of like ticks all the boxes, both horrific and kind of hilarious. So for being known as the breakout prison and new yoga retreat for all of our Kensington listeners, congratulations, Dan.
Thank you so much. I just want to give a quick shout out to all my boys in Port Moresby. keep committing those crimes, keep overcrowding. I couldn't have done it without you. Keep breaking out, fellas. Like, don't do yoga, just break out.
Right? Before we go, I've got to give you some of the worst news of the week. This news comes from Gloucestershire. High-tech smell detectors have been installed in the area around Lyde Green and Emerson's Green because of a sulfury, eggy smell that people can't quite identify what it is or where it's coming from. Apparently it's particularly bad at night. The smell is so strong it is literally waking people up in their sleep. And the Environment Agency hasn't been able to find out the cause of it. So they've installed this equipment which sucks in air and looks for traces of hydrogen sulfide and methane. Paul Scottford from the Environment Agency says it might not completely pinpoint the source, but it'll give us an idea of the direction of where it's coming from. So I saw that, and that was from 2 days ago. And I was like, oh, I wonder if there's more stories about this. And so I googled Lyde Green Smell UK, and literally there's a Reddit from August 2018, over a year ago, with the heading, Smell of Poo in Emerson Green. There is an article from November 2018 in the Bristol Post, Residents report rotten egg smell so bad, etc. It makes your nose burn. January 2019, source of mystery Lyde Green smell remains elusive. February 2019, mystery smell, clues emerge. And May 2019, Reddit again, smell in air, Lyde Green and Emerson's Green. So, and now we're in October, we're nearly in November 2019, and 15 months later, they finally gotten round to installing these fucking machines.
The high-tech smell detectors.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as a dog.
Yeah. So if you're a listener in that area, please keep us up to date. I feel like this is a story that is going to run and run. Dan, where can people find out more about you and your work and all of that?
Probably best to get at me on Twitter or Instagram at Dan Muggleton. Dan, short for Daniel. Muggle, like Harry Potter. T-O-N, like the end of every white person's name.
And you've got a special out as well people can watch.
Yes, on Amazon Prime. If you give me a sweet review, that is the one compliment I'm quite good at taking. It's written down. You give me the 5 stars. Yeah, it's called Daniel Muggleton, Let's Never Hang Out. And it's recorded just before I left Australia. So I look young.
Nice.
You can see it in my face. I'm like, I haven't been subjected to the horrific English conditions yet. I look good.
Meanwhile, we're all off to lock Ben in a cage with squirrels, put it on a lazy Susan, and start rotating. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Those squirrels will become my army.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.